Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast, a show about data networking. We have a sponsored show today with Cisco. We're going to be talking about some cool data center stuff on the Nexus platform and some interesting things about large-scale data center design using VXLAN and some control plane magic. And before we get to that, let me introduce myself as Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter, your co-host. You guys know me. You've been listening to me for, gosh, over 200 shows now. It's a long time. And Greg Farrow is also with me. What's going on, Mr. Farrow?
Not much. I'm at home and my feet are really cold.
They make socks and stuff for that. Just, you know,
they do, but my feet, it's just cold enough to actually make my feet ache. Oh. I have a legacy from cancer as they slice my feet up for various reasons when I had cancer. So when they get cold, they hurt.
And I was going to make fun of you for like getting old. Now I can't do that because they like slice your feet up because of cancer. Now I feel like a jerk. Oh, he's actually got this thing. That's terrible.
Yeah, I have a thing. Yeah. But otherwise I'm good. I'm great, actually. Great. You know?
Good. Awesome.
All good.
Well, let's introduce our friends from Cisco that have joined us. First up is Lucas Kratiger. Lucas, would you introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience and tell folks a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks a lot, Ethan. Yeah, my name is Lucas Kratiger. I'm a technical marketing engineer within Cisco. I'm a lazy blogger, so don't search for any blogs there. What I'm doing days over day is basically looking at data center networks, or what we call today data center fabrics, looking at the overlay space in there. I was with you guys like a couple of months ago. That was, I think, already talking about that thing called Unified Fabric and how we put Fabric Path on steroids with some automation and some control plane there. And I guess these days, I'm here with you guys to talk about similar approach, VXLAN EVPN.
Very good. And you brought along Samir Thoria. Samir, same question. Would you introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience?
Sure. Hi, Ethan. Hi, Greg. This is Samir Thoria. I am a principal engineer at Cisco. My focus area is VXLAN EVPN overlays in data center. And this year, I'll be completing 10 years at Cisco.
Wow, okay. One of the longtime folks at Cisco. But 10 years, quite an achievement. Well, let's introduce the topic here. As we were going back and forth on possible topics to get into, an interesting one came up with VXLAN, where VXLAN is an overlay protocol. It is used to tunnel Ethernet frames from one end of a data center to another, and you can do multi-tenancy in that way. And the thing about VXLAN is there was no control plane ever specified. So if you want to figure out where a host lives on the other side of a VXLAN tunnel, or if you want to figure out where your other VTEP is, your VXLAN tunnel endpoint, there's no magical protocol that's going to figure all that stuff out for you. There's several different ways to get it done. And what we're going to cover in this show is a new approach that Cisco is spearheading here, where BGP is being used as the control plane for all of this discovery. And there's quite a lot to it. It gets I was reading white papers last night, Lucas, some of the stuff that you had sent me, and it gets into the weeds pretty quickly when you start getting through all the different dependencies. It's almost like building a service provider network inside your data center.
Yeah, it can go in that direction if you want to. I mean, you can approach it very simply, or you can go into the weeds that you did. There's a lot of collateral around, a lot of information on EVPN. As EVPN itself is actually, there are multiple drafts in the IETF around drafts for different encapsulations. And what we're going to talk about today is more in the area of that NVO3 or that network overlay space where VXLAN and similars play in. There are others one for the label switch space, like next generation VPLS, if you want to call it. Then there's the provider backbone EVPN approach. So there are multiple flavors there. So yeah, you can go pretty deep on that stuff. But as you said initially, I mean, there's a misperception out there in the industry that VXLAN is a completely integrated fabric with a completely new forwarding semantics and so on and so forth. But actually, it's an overlay which just imposes the flood and learn semantics of Ethernet, of Fabric Path, of whatever you used before, classic flood and learn, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we have there. And we at Cisco, we just think it's not good enough to stay with the flood and learn semantics within data centers where requirements are growing, where people are asking, why do I still flop there? Their MAC address tables are overflowing and stuff like that. So that's where we came up by using BGP as a control plane back a couple of years, and also these days spearheading, as you said, with the layer 2 VPN, eVPN address family, or NLRI, to make it better, basically, to help you guys.
The concern here with flooding is really a scaling problem. And if you're in a data center fabric where you already know where the endpoints are, you already know where all the MAC addresses live and can pinpoint them on one side of a VXLAN tunnel or another and can pre-populate tables with that data, why wouldn't you do that? Why would you rely on, hey, I don't know where this is, so I'm going to flood broadcast to, you know, the whole network segment to try to figure out where it is and, you know, get someone to answer? You pre-populate those tables. That's what we're getting at, right?
That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. And as I said, back in the times, we used routing protocols to route IP. But with eVPN, the capability of also transporting MAC information in the control plane gets available and makes it much more attractive from L2 as well as L3.
Yeah.
Traffic.
So that you just hit on an important point here for us to talk about for just a moment. When most of our listeners think about BGP, they're thinking about it as just a routing protocol. It is something that advertises routes from one autonomous system to another. Maybe some folks that have gotten into it are familiar with eBGP versus iBGP, or setting up a route reflector, or doing confederations. Maybe they're using BGP to talk to their internet service provider and announce some of their own networks into the internet. But a lot of the folks that listen to Packet Pushers don't know much about BGP beyond that. And you're pointing out something really key here that maybe folks haven't heard before, which is you can carry a lot of different things with BGP, not just IPv4 or IPv6 addresses.
Yeah, I think, so multiple protocol BGP has been around for a while, and that's what implies, that you can carry reachability information for any types of addresses. And now with eVPN, BGP has been extended to carry MAC addresses, just like as if they are routable entities. Doesn't stop there, right? In a data center, you have flows which are require just bridging, and there are flows that require routing as well. So eVPN is a common way of establishing reachability in the data center that allows you to route or bridge, and therefore it carries both type of information, MAC and IP addresses.
Yeah, and ISIS is kind of similar. That's come up on the show in the past any number of times where, ISIS is a routing protocol that you might think of as routing IPv4 networks by default, but it can carry all sorts of other information as well, which is kind of an interesting point. You guys picked BGP and not ISIS in this case to do this work. Was there a particular reason that went into that? Was it just driven by the fact that the eVPN pieces that you needed were already there?
There are multiple reasons why we went down that road. You mentioned it initially, multi-tenancy is key. When we're thinking about ISIs and multi-tenant networks, what you're doing, you're basically building a kind of a verflight approach, or you encapsulate this information in there, like having multiple VPNs in there. But BGP already provides me this capability of VPNs, of the clear separation from a control plane perspective across multiple VRFs. And with this, I can save my resources also within the data center. Think of multi-protocol BGP. How many BGP neighbors I really have in my data center, from a leaf to spine, where spine is my route reflector perspective. It's basically one or two. That's all the connections I have. So I don't need to have like hundreds of BGP peers just because of I want to serve 100 VRFs there. So we're really using the kind of service provider VPN approach with separating and leveraging the BGP VPN features in there.
Okay. One of the things I was reading up on in the white papers and some of the Cisco Live presentations you guys sent us, this setup, being able to do this sort of VXLAN control plane using BGP, multi-protocol BGP, isn't available across the entirety of the Cisco platforms. Right now, it's Nexus 9K. You want to talk about the platforms and support and maybe a little bit of roadmap so that people can picture in their mind where they might be able to use this?
Sure. You want me to set my marketing hat up, right?
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
I guess we're thinking more here of what customers have got. If the idea of having a VXLAN overlay in their network, and then they want to implement the autonomous control plane that eVPN using BGP brings to them, then what is the hardware? Because we're dependent on the hardware to bring that feature forward for us.
of course, of course. No, makes absolutely sense. So obviously, as you just said, the Nexus 9300s, they serve VXLAN encapsulation and also have the software capabilities of EVPN already in there. We announced that shipped that beginning of February. We're following it with the Nexus 7000 series and the F3 line cards, which also have VXLAN capability, becoming the EVPN control plane around mid of this year. And then we're following with the Nexus 5600, which is also ASIC platform, which is capable of doing the VXLAN NCAP. And obviously, we just have to make the software capable up there. Next to that, ASR 9000, ASR 1000 are also on the plate, as well as the Nexus 1000V, basically completes the portfolio there in that regards.
So you said the Nexus 1000V. What about, there's an increasing lot of virtual switches in things like Docker and, you know, the OVS. Do you think there's something there for Open vSwitch in the future too?
Well, the Open vSwitch space actually looked today at the OVSDB protocol from a control plane perspective. There's theoretically unbound potential to implement the EVPN draft or BGP as a control plane into these kind of software switches. So industry will show. I mean, there are definitely other software capable switches being around implementing this and looking at this.
I mean, it certainly could. There's no reason why you can't just, you know, extend it so that and as you say, use OVSDB to say here's the configuration information and
absolutely. I mean, the question comes a little bit with, do I want to have only a layer 2 gateway, what most of the switches are today when we look from a software perspective, or do I want to have the integrated route bridge approach where I do my routing or my bridging decision as close to my end host as possible?
Yeah. Well, I think in a data center of scale, I mean, typically you're going to be talking about, you know, layer 3 as close to the endpoint as you can have it.
That's what we want to do, and that's what we call the distributed Anycast gateway. And the semantics we're using in there, or what the common term is IRB or integrated route and bridge.
Okay, so right, distributed Anycast gateway, meaning most folks that are running data centers are probably using some kind of a first hop redundancy protocol, like if they're in a Cisco shop, HSRP or VRRP, GLBP, I guess a little bit too. But for most data center stuff, it's going to be, you know, HSRP or VRRP. Okay, so that's fine. Those gateways are okay, but typically that means the active gateway is tied to one physical machine, which in a leaf spine design where you want any of your Tor switches to be able to be your gateway doesn't work in this scenario. So what you're talking about with the distributed Anycast gateway is any of those top of rack switches are going to respond to the gateway IP when one of the hosts says, hey, I need my default gateway. So you get an efficiency there, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So the distributed Anycast gateway is kind of a set of all TORs act like one giant default gateway. And the workload can attach at any physical top of the rack switch and expect the same service. There won't be any disruption. The traffic flows would be optimal through EVPN updates. So it's basically allowing flexibility in being any workload anywhere with optimal routing.
Okay, so let's back up a second here. When you start talking about using BGP as a control plane for VXLAN, you're kind of jumping into the deep end just automatically, just to even have that conversation. I think one of the things that would help set in people's minds how this all fits together would just be to walk through at a high level, you know, a data center architecture here. Physically, let's assume we've got a leaf spine design, some number of Tor switches, top of rack switches that are plumbed in to at least two, probably four different spine switches. And then from there, again, VXLAN is an overlay, right? So it's an overlay, meaning it's encapsulating Ethernet frames. That overlay's got to ride on an underlay. So why don't we start there? Assuming we've got a physical leaf spine design and there's an underlay that these VXLAN packets are riding over, what does that underlay look like in a scenario like this?
Okay, very fair point. I mean, we're getting nerdy on the protocols right away without covering basically the basics which are required or which build on it. So just in general, you build your network in a data center. These days, we're talking about these class kind topologies like spine leaf kind of approaches where the spine is actually, let's call it a more dumb forwarder, does not know anything about what the traffic actually is, meaning the end host traffic, where the leaf knows exactly what's coming in and taking care on the encapsulation. As you said, there is an underlay required in order to transport these overlay encapsulated packets. In case of VXLAN, it's IP UDP traffic across that routed fabric underneath. And obviously, there are some advantages in stability convergence as well as all forwarding links in regards to layer 3 networks there. So yes, so that underlay, what could it be? Obviously, we have the OSPFs, we have the ISIS, the dynamic routing protocols, the IGPs, which are suitable in that case. There could also be used BGP, meaning I or eBGP in that case, to create this reachability from these so-called VTAPs, the VXLAN tunnel endpoints.
Yeah, we're really talking about, I mean, for folks that have never done an overlay, you know, NCAP in their data centers, we're just talking about your regular IP forwarding scheme, whatever that is. Like you said, Lucas, OSPF, ISIS, even BGP in some cases. For data centers that need to scale up.
It builds your topology, right? It builds your topology where you put the stuff on top of it, meaning your
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just this, it's as dumb and as simple as it can be. It's forwarding IP packets. Like you said, VXLAN, UDP, I think it's port 4789, gives you some, you know, ECMP so you can, you know, load VXLAN packets equal cost across multiple links. That's really all it is. And then how you do the numbering between the links on your leaf spine is there's different options. You can do IP unnumbered. You can do /31s. But that's all that is. It's just this dumb IP fabric that that just forwards things from end to end. And for the most part, we're talking about VXLAN packets, you know, VTAP to VTAP, getting a VXLAN packet from one Tor switch to another.
Correct. That's basically what we're seeing in the network or what gets forwarded there. As you said, there are multiple routing protocols which could be chosen there. There are some pros on one, there are other pros on the other one. You said IP unnumbered to simplify the addressing scheme underneath, point-to-point links, /31, /30. You choose how you want to build your routed underlay network there. And that's basically, I guess you figured out that that stuff based on one of the docs I send you with the presentations we did at Cisco Live to highlight that there is an underlay and what the requirements and some highlight points are in that regards there.
Right. That was all covered in several presentations that we're going to link to in the show notes. So if you go up to packetpushers.net and look in the show notes, I'm going to link you to all of the a Cisco white paper, a blog that Lucas wrote, and some Cisco Live presentations that get into this if you really want to get into the nuts and bolts of how you'd build this thing. But just for purposes of this show, okay, so we've kind of, hopefully, as engineers listening to this, we're all imagining leaf spine. We're imagining an IP fabric that forwards between Tor switches. And now that we've got that, now we've got this VXLAN overlay that we're slapping on top of this thing. So we're not routing traffic between endpoints across this underlay. That's all going to go inside of overlay packets. We are just focused on moving VXLAN packets around this data center now. Okay, cool. Now let's talk about the process of VXLAN. What does that look like? How are we? Because this gets into the how BGP helps us here to advertise endpoints and advertise do VTAP discovery and this kind of stuff.
So I think just one quick thing that's probably worthwhile mentioning on the previous topic of underlays is that it's got to be reliable, definitely, because the overlays no more reliable than the underlay to at least start with. So the underlay is very critical in terms of making sure of reliability, the ECMP thing that you briefly covered as well. So that's what in terms of the underlay design, in terms of the overlay, VXLAN used for encapsulating traffic coming from servers and making sure it is optimally delivered to the other endpoint that the source is trying to reach to. To allow this optimal forwarding, EVPN basically distributes the endpoint reachability information. And the reachability information can be gleaned from several different mechanisms. It could be as simple as ARP snooping. It could be or some other variant of an access protocol coming from the server that detects the identity of the server and which is then advertised through an EVPN route.
Basically, that's distributing the the MAC addresses throughout the infrastructure there, whereas everybody's listening to this show should be familiar with Ethernet switches, just the way that they learn MAC addresses, apply those MAC addresses to their bridging tables, that they know how to forward at layer two frames from one port to another port, or switch those frames from one port to another port. So here, when we're getting into scaling up the data center really big, and we're talking, I don't know, what would we say, hundreds of thousands or millions of endpoints and MAC addresses, there comes a point in, do you really want that many MAC addresses floating around your hardware? And when does the silicon kind of, when's it going to bust because there's only so many MAC addresses you can hold? Doesn't it make sense to distribute that information intelligently across the infrastructure so that switches only know about the specific MAC addresses that they need to know about, rather than everybody that happens to be on a common segment learning everything that they happen to see go by? So this is really what's happening here, right?
Yeah, so I think you make an interesting point, right? And this is one of the key building blocks that BGP provides through the route target filtering, which is the mechanism in BGP to make sure that the reachability information is imported only where on the nodes it really needs to be. So this is a way of making sure that not all million MACs are bombarded on any device. Network-wide scale might be in millions, but node scale is still a different discussion. And a node will only need to get MAC addresses that it really needs to reach to, which is basically in a given Ethernet broadcast domain. So BGP provides all the machinery to do this level of filtering. There are also additional techniques to make sure that we couple the control plane scale from the data plane scale, and we don't have to download every single MAC in the control plane to the hardware.
Is scaling there solved because the endpoints are the only place that are holding information relevant to the endpoint? So,
if you've got
250 hosts connected to a VLAN, then only those 250 hosts need, only the BGP for that VLAN is the only thing that holds those MAC addresses. It's not required for every physical device in the network to hold those MAC addresses. And by distributing the complexity to the edge of the network, you scale better. So each point at the edge of the network, each Nexus 1000V, each physical switch at the edge of the network only holds what it needs for the devices that are connected to it. And then the VXLAN overlay means that the core of the network is radically simplified. Now, this, of course, is MPLS logic, right? Something we've been doing for the last 20 years now.
That's absolutely correct, Greg. I want to highlight one thing in that regards. I mean, you mentioned the tables, right? And we are only storing exactly what we really need for the respective communication in a given VLAN. But I think it goes one step beyond. When we're remembering how classic Ethernet networks are being built, and then also the machina in MAC encapsulation started over, it's kind of every VLAN everywhere. It was a very flat kind of approach of distributing information, and you start building pods and so on and so forth. So what we are doing these days is so-called scoped configuration. That means only if there is a requirement for a given endpoint on a given switch, we go and install and configure the respective VLAN, VNI, SVI, and so on and so forth, and also save resources on that given system from a control as well as from a data plane perspective. And by doing this in parallel, that scale-out approach, networks can become much bigger if you decide to do this.
Who are the use cases for this this sort of a setup then? I mean, is it really just people that have big networks, or are there more specific things that you can zoom in on?
Well, big networks is always in the eye of the observer, right? It's
yeah.
I think it's more important to look at how a network can adapt to the needs I'm having. That means growth. That means flexibility in specific service placement and specific routing policies or forwarding policies I want to implement. And it gives me a bigger flexibility in how I can build my network without rebuilding or limiting the communication path. Also, when you think on what you build or on top of what you build, mostly you have switches which are having a certain bottleneck and you cannot use all the resources you're having in there. By using the scoped configuration and the scale-out approach, that learning with the control plane and only installing the necessaries, that gives you an option to much, much better leverage your infrastructure components you have today and bring them also into the next generation or in the next life cycle period of your infrastructure needs.
Can we talk about configuration of this whole thing for a minute? Because it kind of occurred to me that so many of the conversations we've been having on packet pushes about leading edge network projects are SDN related somehow. There's a controller involved that's doing an awful lot of programming. But that hasn't come up in this conversation yet. So if I wanted to, you know, build this thing out, what am I in for?
Today's Cisco approach is having three kind of data center approaches, data center network approaches. So the one is what we know, the classic Ethernet kind of network, everything manual configured, no end caps there, meaning no overlays, nothing else. Then we have a step, which is our golden great thing, which is called ACI, which is the fully integrated fabric, including management, application integration, and so on and so forth. Now, there is a middle thing, which we call the standalone fabric, which is basically still going into the direction of manually configured switches, but also provides you, in addition to the manual configuration, certain tools and options in order to automate these things. I mean, there are OpenStack Mac drivers, which is one part which we are leveraging there. There is, obviously, we talked about Data Center Network Manager back in an earlier podcast. That's obviously also there and has capabilities to provide day zero power on auto provisioning, or then also the tenant-based configuration during the life cycle of the network. And there is also upcoming new, I don't want to call it a controller per se, but actually it is one, which is the virtual topology system, which we are leveraging to build VXLAN EVPN configuration in a more automated way with all the virtualization vendors being in part there. It's called VTS, basically.
Okay, so the answer is there is a lot of manual configuration involved if you want to
there
do it that
be.
Way.
There could be, yes.
And but there's also a number of different automation choices. There's no one reference way that you have to do it, but there's a bunch of different options there that you can get into depending on what OpenStack's going to work good for some people and not for others, for example.
Yes. So just in general, you said I gave the options right now just here in the talk, but obviously what we're trying to do, similar to what we did with Unified Fabric before, is to build kind of a reference topology or reference infrastructure where we're saying this is our controller piece or management piece. There are templates shipped with it. There is the whole day zero piece in there. There's visibility in there. That's how you integrate your, for example, your vCenter or your OpenStack into that. And this is a way you can do. We scale to that number. That's how we do. Click and you're gone. That's definitely one approach we are going to follow. But we want to leave it open to our customers to have the flexibility.
There's a key point here, and it's one I've been talking about in the last. I only realized it sort of late last year. Is that a lot of what we're talking about with SDN, and there's a lot more, and there's a key transition here. For the last decade or so, we've really only had one choice in the data center. You buy a tree hierarchical-based network, and you have chassis, and you have, you know, fixed unit switches at the edge and chassis in the core. And there's only ever been one data center design, and everybody knew what it looked like. And the arrival of SDN has coincided with a transition in the way the hardware works, in that we can now start to use ECMP. So layer 2 ECMP was coming, as well as SDN. And so now you have the situation where there's no longer just one design for the data center network. There's two or three different choices as to how you go about it. And some of them are, you know, trill-based, layer 2 ECMP. You get your VLANs everywhere. It's fully manually configured. Then you've got the full SDN, which is, you know, Cisco ACI represents the full wraparound where everything's done in the controller and there's very little, you know, CLI work on the devices themselves. And then Cisco still has another choice which sits in the middle, which is what we're talking about here with the VXLAN and BGP control plane, the EVPN technology, which is using ECMP but combining some of the manual. And that's a key transition. There's no longer just one way to design your data center network. There's three, or at least three, if not more.
Yes. So when we're looking at data center transformations, it's definitely going into automation. And that's where we're seeing our customer going, where the industry is going. But there are still very classic kind of shops, meaning customers, meaning implementation companies, which rely on the more networking, meaning the bottom-up approach, if you want to call it this way, when we look at it from OSI layer.
Customers who are still using Nexus 7000 and they're doing layer 2 and spanning tree, and you know that's not going to change any time in the next decade for a lot of customers. But there are other customers who are willing to, you know, are able to, as you say, do a transformation and start to deploy. I guess my point is that if you're looking at this and going, hang on, I don't understand, there seems to be all these different things going on. There is different choices. They're completely different, three different architectures we just talked about there as ways of handling a data center network.
Yes, and depending on the infrastructure component you decide to go, I mean, maybe you buy something today or you already bought something, you also have the option of going through this evolution if you see that's beneficial to you. I mean, I can operate today an XS 9000 in a standalone mode as a VPC kind of pair, classic Ethernet, multi-chassis link aggregation approach, but the same hardware also gives me the option to use overlays. To use the control plane there, to use all the fancy DevOps tool or like the Puppet, the Chefs, the Ansibles, and so on them to build automation into that middle layer in that middle stage. But then I also can add the APIC controller and build an ACI fabric out of the same hardware. So depending on where you are from your IT department perspective, your capabilities of adopting different technology pieces, learning curve, and so on and so forth, You have a real choice where to go.
Hey, Lucas, something you just said that reminded me of something I read last night that I didn't quite have enough time to make sense of, and maybe you could clarify for me. You were talking about hardware, and you were talking about certain capabilities that's in various bits of hardware there as one of the things you mentioned. VXLAN routing in a Tor switch came up, and I couldn't wrap my brain around what exactly VXLAN routing was, because I'm thinking it's VTEP, you do an NCAP, and then you forward the packet out the switch. Why? What would VXLAN routing be?
Okay, so when we're talking about VXLAN forwarding methods, there are three different kind of gateway modes we're looking at. There's obviously the VLAN to VXLAN gateway, which is a bridging approach. There is VLAN to VXLAN routing, meaning I'm coming from a VLAN classic Ethernet going into a VXLAN and I'm changing the subnet. Basically, that's the routing approach. And then when we're talking about VXLAN routing, it would be from one VXLAN network, a so-called VNI, virtual network identifier, to another virtual network identifier. That's when we're going down that road. Okay. And when you think of me being a host behind the Tor and I want to reach a host in a different subnet, I go to my top of rack switch, I do my route switch lookup depending on what's my destination MAC, consult my control plane, and then either do routing or do bridging in that specific case. Now, when I'm going to the border of the network, I might want to stop my VXLAN encapsulation because it's a domain boundary in that case and want to either re-encap into another VXLAN kind of transit network, if you want to call it this way, or just leave into an MPLS, LISP kind of approach or whatever you want. So this flexibility in from where to where, that's what actually is being described in that regards.
Okay, so when you're talking about being able to do VXLAN routing on a Tor switch, you're actually bragging about the capabilities of the silicon that's in that switch to be able to do that particular kind of a transformation.
Correct. In Nexus 9000, we're using a Merchant Plus approach where the Cisco ASIC gives us the capability of VXLAN routing in the Nexus 7000, Nexus 5600, it's our silicon which does VXLAN NCAP as well as routing there.
Well, that's one of the things that caught my attention as I was reading is that Trident 2, which you find in lots and lots of switches from lots of vendors now, doesn't actually do this one specific thing. It doesn't do VXLAN routing. I got a couple of questions regarding just certain common scenarios that would happen and then what VXLAN and BGP looks like during these actions. And then we got some other questions, too, about security and some other stuff. So can we walk through a couple of scenarios here? One would be, let's say, a new there's one thing we haven't talked about yet that I wanted to hit, which was auto-discovery of VTEPs was something that I had read about. Am I understanding that correctly, that you can auto-discover VXLAN tunnel endpoints through this VXLAN using BGP as control plane?
Yeah, that is correct. So VTEPs, the VXLAN tunnel endpoints, are basically advertised as BGP next hops in the route. So basically in the route, you have an address that is a possible destination and a next hop value, which is basically saying this is where you send the traffic to reach that destination. So the BGP next hops are VXLAN tunnel endpoint IP addresses, and so the VTEP discovery is enabled. And there are two different variations on where the VTEP discovery is required, and the devil is in that detail. For unicast reachability, basically the VTEP discovery just allows you to say, this is my server MAC address, and this is how you reach it. This is the next stop that you have to send traffic to reach that MAC address. The other case where VTEP discovery is required is what we are calling it as ingress replication. That is a mode in which we can send a multi-destination frame by using unicast replication. Typically, the way of doing this in VXLAN is take the Ethernet frame and encapsulate in an underlay IP multicast header and let the multicast tree do the replication. So there are some scenarios in which a customer or the use case might not have a capability to do underlay multicast. And a unicast-based replication is required to send multi-destination traffic. So what BGP EVPN allows is to do VTEP discovery in context of a given broadcast domain. So it allows us to discover that there is a certain VLAN, let's say VLAN 100. It's mapped to a VXLAN 1000, and it has the tunnel endpoints 1, 2, and 7, for example, that are part of that broadcast domain. So it lets you do this auto discovery of VTEPs that are interested in a specific broadcast domain, and lets you build a replication list to which you will send ingress replicated traffic.
I'm giggling to myself a little bit here because I'm listening to that going, that all makes sense, but it also assumes that the underlay has been built and is working, and some network engineers are going, geez, my underlay was complicated enough getting the thing built. Now I'm going to add
all this additional functionality
on top and add BGP, and it's going to advertise VTEPs for me. Oh my gosh, how am I ever going to troubleshoot this thing?
Oh, that's a very good point. But let me just add something to what Samir just said. I mean, we were talking about the underlay before. As Samir said, there are two options of doing bump traffic replication within VXLAN. One is the traditional one we probably all know about, which is multicast-based. And in that multicast-based, we also did the VTAP discovery in VXLAN flood and learn, meaning when we didn't have any control plane there. And then the ingress replication piece basically has a list of VTAPs where we replicate respective traffic to when you belong in that given VNI, meaning that given layer 2 domain in that case. And EVPN does it dynamically versus when you don't have a control plane transporting the VTEP information, you have to configure that statically in there. Just to complete that piece there. Now, on the side of manageability, meaning, yes, we have an underlay, yes, we have an overlay, and as we know out of the past, and I mean, we at Cisco have quite some experience with overlays when we look at OTV for data center interconnects, various other ones, the key is how do I operate that and how do I manage that? How do I troubleshoot that? And that's where the OEM piece comes into the game. And there are currently these days, as we speak, for VXLAN, there are OEM efforts there, which gives you this combined visibility about the overlay underlay, given based on which interface you're egressing or which path you're taking. And you can plot these information in order to have a more feeling how you did classic layer 3 routing before no overlay imposed there.
Okay, so let's do a common scenario in a big data center, which would be a host move. Could you walk us through what happens in the control plane so that when that MAC has moved from one tor to another, you know, what changes have gone on to facilitate that move?
Normally in a BGP route, two BGP speakers announce the same destination. It really leads to an ECMP path. It's basically saying that there are two ways to get to that destination. When a host moves, actually it's not an ECMP, but you have to break the tie with the previous location and establish to the new location. So So EVPN has this signaling mechanism that allows us to signal that this particular route instance is more up-to-date than the previous route instance, and it's done by what is called as a MAC mobility sequence attribute in the route. So when a host moves from location 1 to location 2, once that host is detected or the location 2 knows that it's now local, it advertises an EVPN route that has a higher sequence number than the previous route, and therefore trumping the previous route, and rest of the network converges to the new location.
Okay, so effectively it's a sequence number that just updates, hey, I've got something more recent than the rest of you guys, which is pretty common in routing protocols in general. Some kind of a sequence number is going to notify that that there's been a change and things are later than what you've got if you've got the older sequence.
Yeah, using BGP as a database at this point, and you're just putting a sequence number on the record to signal the update.
What didn't come through up to now is it is not only the MAC information we are storing in BGP or the IP information. Actually, when we look at the format, it is a MAC, IP, and respectively also the layer 2 domain as well as the layer 3 domain being stored in there. So we really have a full navigation system in BGP about layer 2 information, layer 3 information, and which respective VERF or VLAN or VNI in that case, and at which location that's respective.
Yeah, so multi-protocol BGP is ultimately extensible. If you were following along with Lisp about a year ago, we were doing Lisp in the same way. So Lisp would propagate the information, but using the Lisp controller. No, it wasn't a controller. It was
the MapTP.
Yeah, the MapTP, right?
Mapping database so, there, yes.
Yeah, Lisp used more of a DNS model. This is using BGP, which is distributing the information. And, you know, it's a good way of doing it. It makes it very easy and it's very granular. So each record can be propagated throughout the system as it changes. So, and because it's in the network, it's independent of what's happening outside of the network. It's just the thing that you've got to be thinking about is how does the end host signal to the network, how to the switch or where the EVPN endpoint is to say this host is now at this point. That's what you've got to be looking for.
Yes, well, BGP has that distributed database architecture or distributed database architecture approach. As you said, Greg, it follows a push model. I mean, BGP speaker sends it to the route reflector, probably as the best replicator in that case, and sends it to the other peering points there. With Lisp, we're using a little bit different approach. We're using a pull model there. We only go and get the information when we really require them up there. But yes, absolutely. I mean, there are similarities in how things are happening from a BGP to Lisp MapDB control plane perspective, when we just look at the object which we are storing and what the capabilities are, what we could achieve.
So I guess the next point here is to start talking about how we handle, you know, once we've got these mechanisms in place, how do we start turning this into network services that we can offer to the business? So we, you know, once you've got VXLAN, the end hosts are now able to be segmented and then mobile, because the host can move around the network and you can have multiple VXLAN segments for segmentation, right?
Yes, absolutely. So within the semantics of VXLAN EVPN, we're using obviously still VRFs. We're also using the VLAN kind of equivalent, the VNI, and also the VRF itself, as we're using that VPN approach within BGP, the VRF itself also owns an own VNI. So Let's go maybe shortly through a kind of imaginary packet walk going from A to B. My host, let's say host A, subnet A, wants to go to host B, subnet B. We do the lookup and get basically within the VRF a next hop information. Now, with this next hop information, we also get basically the layer 3 VPN ID, how we can reach that other subnet, that other end host in that other subnet. And that's how we start then encapsulating the traffic in VXLAN with that so-called, if you want to, VPN label, which is nothing else than a VNID. So that's kind of the layer 3 multi-tenancy approach, the layer 3 VPN approach we are doing. Layer 2, obviously, we're going into the switch. If you want to communicate in the same subnet, same VNID, we're going into the switch, doing a bridge lookup. Where is my destination MAC address I want to reach. Obviously, I get there also the VNID. I encapsulate in that VNID forward to the destination Tor based on the next hop IP address from the VTAP, decapsulate and reach that end host there from a layer two perspective. So you see that's that integrated route bridge approach with the multi-tenancy being part there.
But the idea here is that we've taken VLANs, turned them into, and they're now inside of a VXLAN. We can now, because we control the VXLAN, we can start to build multi-tenancy.
So that's correct.
You can have a data center which has, if you're an enterprise data center, you don't have multiple customers, but you do have multiple business units or multiple data classifications. And
multiple security zones.
That's right, exactly. And we've never been able to isolate them in the data center because VLANs weren't inherently secure and MPLS didn't scale down to the data center size. And this
is
the way.
VLANs never scaled as well, right? We only had 4,000 of them. Now, with the much larger namespace we get in VXLAN, we can also do service stitching more efficiently without losing too many IDs, and all the service integration approaches can get much more flexible as the address space grows.
Yeah. That's right. So that flips out to a discussion we had recently about network services headers. And this BGP, the EVPN, links into a network services header strategy that Cisco's pushing, which is to extend the VXLAN tag to have service identifier information in it so that you can actually chain NFV services together. But that's a different discussion. If you want to look for that show, I will put link to it in the show notes.
Oh, you want to have a link to that discussion? I mean, let's go one step back. I mean, yes, network services header is basically the logical evolution of what we did with Cisco TrustSec with the secure group tagging approach. Mm-hmm. And NSH is basically the evolution coming out of that, being more on the standard side to do basically exactly that approach.
It's important to flag that out, right? Because Cisco is of a certain size where you can start to stitch together multiple technologies into a coherent whole. So we're talking here about using VXLAN overlays inside of the network to provide segmentation, host mobility, and scaling out. But it also integrates with new technologies that are being developed like network services header, which is in itself an evolution of the security group tag technology, which comes from the security team. And it integrates into virtual firewalls, which Cisco also offers. And there's a whole bunch of, you know, this is this end-to-end capability that Cisco can bring to the discussion, which is incredibly valuable.
Yes, Greg. I mean, that's a great point. And now we're again at these three different architecture points where you can choose in which way you want to go. I mean, the classic Ethernet world with the secure group tag, which we mentioned before, then we just talked about NSH approach and bringing the secure group tag into VXLAN, or then the logical integrated system which we did in ACI, which basically combines that stuff, including the management approach as well. Just to close the loop a little bit.
Yeah, I just think it's important to flag out that, you know, this doesn't sit in isolation. This EVPN strategy is much wider than just solving, you know, this segmentation, mobility, and scaling issue inside of the data center.
Absolutely, absolutely. As you know, when you give the nerds more geeky stuff, they want to learn, they want to adopt it, and then they start stacking it. And I mean, we can always bring a complete integrated system, or we can always bring a completely modular system, depending on what the gusto of you are is.
We've been talking a bit about security here and there, and I'm actually curious about that. Someone on Twitter mentioned that all VXLAN's insecure. You can't really protect that. It's too easy to spoof the VNI. And then way back early in the days of 802.1Q, it was trivial for some to spoof a VLAN tag and just get around into a segment you maybe shouldn't be in. Are we kind of back at that beginning point with VXLAN, where it's kind of easy to spoof things? Or
one of the things that we are doing to address the issue that you just brought up is we are tying up control plane security with data plane. And by that, what I mean is BGP can enable authentication, and whatever information we learn through BGP can be considered quote-unquote trusted. We take this information and kind of create a whitelist in the data plane that basically only says that only these are the authorized VXLAN tunnel endpoints that can source VXLAN encapsulated packet. Any other source trying to inject packet in it won't be able to get through. We will drop the traffic from such a source. So it allows us to kind of tie in two things together from control plane and data plane and do some security there.
Is that exchange encrypted, or is that just you're saying this MAC address is trusted?
So, The whitelist is just kind of a allow, deny kind of action. That whitelist is populated through authenticated BGP sessions. So the BGP authentication are standard mechanisms that people are already used to.
They continue on. You can secure the BGP protocol, which secures the data exchange process. And then there's sort of like an access. When you say whitelist, I'm thinking like access list, which says these people can add data to my BGP, you know, tell me about things in the VXLAN world. Yeah.
I mean, you have to authenticate with me before you're even allowed to send me traffic. I don't care what you're sending me if I don't know about you. Hmm. And I think there the control plane and data plane combination brings a very nice approach with that security methodology we brought in there. Obviously, I mean, you can always say, okay, it's not traffic still, not encrypted. It's just basically encapsulated there. If you feel to use MACSEC in the physical wiring there, you can get full encryption there as well. Depending on the hardware capabilities, you can think of doing some things like encrypt VXLAN into IPsec or whatever other crazy stuff if you feel so. But obviously, I mean, choose right, choose your drug there. But to a certain extent, we also have to agree that the space within the data center has to have a certain security level itself, and that there are not like millions of rogue hosts or rogue VXLAN speakers in there. And if there is one, we still have an opportunity in order to secure that.
I think it's important to point out that back in the day of 802.1Q and things like a bogus VLAN tag being injected by a host and causing a switch to forward a frame where it shouldn't go, these days, with VXLAN, it's a different technology, and the NCAP isn't happening at the host. It's happening way down inside, either on a software vSwitch or further down on a hardware switch that's acting as a VTAP. And so you can't – I mean, a host doesn't have access to make VXLAN packets, if you will. So there is – yes, there's still some security concerns, but it's a little different of an animal.
It is. It is. I mean, we're protecting – well, if you want to call it this way, we're protecting our fabric by using a different mode of forwarding and encapsulation in there. We're not down at the MAC NCAP, which we used before in the wire directly. We're going a couple of levels higher, and we introduce control planes and additional security measures in order to avoid this kind of happening there.
So I wanted to ask a little bit more. Now, the thing is that the data center itself doesn't live in isolation anymore. You know, the old days of the WAN interconnect being a separate abstraction away from where the data center was. This capability, this BGP with the VXLAN, means we can probably start looking better at how it integrates with our MPLS WAN and, as time goes by, into our WAN overlays. Do you want to have a – is that coming – is that on the map?
Absolutely fair point, Greg. Yes. So when you think that we're using BGP, it would be very close to say, hey, let's do the integration with Layer 3 VPN, what we have on the MPLS space. And yes, before end of this year, we are going to bring this capability in the Nexus 7000 platform as well as in the ASR 9K platforms. There are a couple of projects running and also more autonomously doing the configuration piece in that regards. So yes, absolutely. We are having the MPLS handoffs, the L3 handoffs, kind of verf light approach, and then handing it to a PE if you want. So if you have this segregation of duty at some of the customers, this is all being followed and on the roadmap to become real in a bit from now.
Yeah, and we are bringing this new way of building data center fabric, right? VXLAN, EVPN, but the fabric by itself doesn't live in isolation. So we are trying to integrate with all of the other WAN technologies. IPVPN is one thing Lucas mentioned. It could be VPLS in the WAN. It could be a Lisp-based mobility to a branch site. So we are integrating with all of our existing external WAN connectivity technologies.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point, Samir. So the Lisp integration piece is very interesting when we look at VXLAN together with Lisp from an NCAP perspective. It's pretty similar to each other. We have an EVPN in push. We have a Lisp MapDB approach in more the pull model. So that complements very nicely from an in-data center to between data center, for example, for data center interconnect. And as both are working with host route objects there, it's very nicely being integrated. And that's actually in the closer future, we're going to bring the software availability on the Nexus 7000 with the F3 line cards, where Lisp integrates with eVPN.
Right. So
at the first release there, yes.
Okay. So there's some fairly interesting, you know, again, this comes back to this, you know, Cisco is able to bring all these different parts together and start welding them into an end-to-end capability. The other thing that strikes me about this is that because you're using BGP as a database, this also means that you've now got a lot more metadata. So if we go back to where we're talking about, not only does the record that we're propagating about the machine have like the MAC address, it also has the IP address, and there's other pieces of metadata associated with that. You've now actually got a lot more visibility about what's in the network. So, for example, I imagine that your ability to troubleshoot and have visibility of the network is vastly improved because you can now say, where's this MAC address in my network? And it's right there because the BGP table's got it for you.
Absolutely, yes. We have this capability, obviously, as BGP knows about all this information. Now, it's just a matter of using our network management tool to also leverage this information to allow you to do much integrated troubleshooting and correlate data between what you know out of the compute space, what you know out of the configuration, and what you know out of the BGP control plane. I mean, troubleshooting changes, right? I mean, when you think of how have you done troubleshooting in a flood and learn classic Ethernet network, you basically went hop by hop based on the egress-ingress interfaces and looked at the MAC address where it came from for the given VLAN. It was pretty time-consuming to find these issues and to follow the path there. Now, with BGP as a database, as a repository, as a forwarding information base, we can now leverage this to exactly know where a given host is. We know what MAC, what IP that given host has. I can search for IP, I can search for MAC, depending on what I like, what the service administrator gives me. And I also know in which respective VLAN or layer 2 segments or layer 3 segments this respective host resides and behind which of the switches. So I get much more information. I also know about moves which might have happened and a couple of other attributes which are available. I mean, BGP is so extensible. When you also look about communities which are there, so I can do really fancy stuff there.
Up until now, we've not had any APIs on the BGP stack, so we haven't been able to query it, right? Now, I imagine as part of this eVPN, you're looking very closely at how you query it from the controller's point of view, or there's an application that can query it for database. So you can say, where's this IP address, where's this MAC address? And that means our network monitoring apps, our network management applications are far more superior. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. Now, obviously, we at Cisco always use a little bit of our secret sauce in doing this. And I mentioned before that with the virtual topology system that we're using a more integrated approach of looking at the eVPN information there. And obviously, we're querying eVPN.
The controller can be infinitely flexible and it's got to render.
Yes.
It's about, you know, we've got to get away from, you know, finger banging the keyboard to get our visualization on the network. We've got to have, you know, I want to know where this host name is. And then the machine automatically says, well, I know its IP address, its MAC address, and then click on it and it shows you where in the network it is.
Exactly. Because I mean, what have you done back in service provider networks in regards to BGP route servers using visualization software, which we hooked into it and built basically network topology graphics for the internet networks based on all the BGP information? And this is now available as well for the data center and makes life much easier from that perspective.
Okay.
No more.
And UCS servers? So the logical extension of this is that UCS servers have the NICs inside, you know, that have the enhanced capabilities, the UCS 2200 switches, and then they combine with the UCS 6000 series. That's got to be, you know, in the long term, again, getting onto this integration thread, you're going to be able to do this right up in the hardware in those?
Well, we definitely have the capability of doing VXLAN offloading in the ASIC, in the network cards going forward. That's definitely something which is there, which is not only planned, it's actually imminent there. And with this, we obviously can do VXLAN offloading directly in the server if we decide to use a virtual switch, which is doing that encapsulation at that space. So that's definitely something we're looking at and
yep.
How to integrate that more from an end-to-end perspective. This is obviously the case, yes.
Yeah, that. I mean, it just seems intuitive to me. I just wanted to ask because lots of people have UCS servers now, and that's the value of them is that the UCS server, sometimes I think of them as network accessories, not servers.
Yeah, you can think about that this way, but on the end, it's still a compute node which has a certain CPU memory capabilities. Yeah. And if you have that strong CPUs these days, you also need the respective I/O on that server, on that compute piece as well. And I think there, the integration which we did in UCS with CPU memory as well as I/O in a nice balanced combination plays a very important role and very nice role in that overall data center stack.
One thing we haven't really talked about is interoperability. Is this a Cisco only solution, or is this going to be something that that the broader industry adopts? And if the broader industry is interested in adopting it, what are some of the issues that that folks are looking at?
Sure. That's a very good question. So as I said previously, there are a couple of EVPN drafts around, and where we're focusing on is on the VXLAN-related one, the NB03 one, or the NBO one, network overlay one. When it comes to standards, we know at a given point, ITF decide, okay, this is now the final thing, but on the way from the initial drafts over the different iterations, there are some changes, improvements being made. These days, we're probably most likely at the top of what the draft brings from an implementation perspective in our switches, but there is obviously other switching equipment out there, which is in a little bit in a previous stage, an older draft there. There we basically saw that there are some shortcomings in the different implementation drafts today, but going forward, there is broad industry interoperability from an EVPN perspective there. There is one variation in the EVPN draft, which is in regards to that integrated route bridge approach. There are two modes. It's one is called symmetric IRB, the other one also asymmetric IRB, and I'll let Samir talk a little bit about these differences in there so you can highlight the options and variations in there.
Yeah, so I think to the point of interop, the drafts and the standards out there define different kind of modes of operation. They have different characteristics. Some of them have different use case. The particular one that Lucas is bringing up right now is the way in which the route lookups are done. And there are two different modes. We call them symmetric and asymmetric IRB. The IRB is the integrated and routing and bridging piece. And the symmetric versus asymmetric part applies to what kind of lookups are done on an ingress store and an egress store. So if the lookups are symmetric, we call them symmetric IRB. If the lookup on ingress and egress are asymmetric, it is asymmetric IRB. To expand a bit more, on the symmetric IRB, the lookup that are done on ingress flow is basically we do a bridge lookup first, a route lookup next. And this is, again, the whole reason we are doing route lookup is because the source and the destination of the flow are in different subnets, so you have to route the packet. So you do bridge lookup first, you route look do a routing lookup, which gives basically the remote endpoint. From there on, we do VXLAN encapsulation. The VXLAN encapsulated traffic is then routed in the underlay. It shows up on the egress switch. And now the devil is in what does the egress switch do with it. If the egress switch does exactly the same operations as the ingress, which is route and bridge, then that's a symmetric IRB. If the egress switch is only bridging, then it's asymmetric compared to the ingress lookups. Now, these are all the details, but the key point to highlight is that depending on what lookups needs to be done on ingress and egress, different state needs to be set up in the forwarding. The key difference is the symmetric IRB, we don't need to know every single MAC address or every single ARP entries of the egress node. So it's inherently more scalable. I need to program less state. I need to manage less state in my node. With asymmetric IRB, what you end up with is basically all MACs and all ARP entries distributed in way more nodes than the symmetric IRB requires. So there are definitely some scaling benefits of doing symmetric IRB. And the Cisco solution that was announced with Nexus 9K is going out with symmetric IRB. We are aware of some other implementations that are doing asymmetric IRB, and this is where there might be some interop implications of this because they are inherently different modes of operation.
Now, Samir, I'm assuming that if, as there's been some interoperability testing that's done that's revealed this issue, the IETF draft is not specifying strongly enough symmetric or asymmetric. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It just defines that if you want to operate in this mode, this is how you do it. If you want to operate in this mode, this is how you do it. And both modes are defined.
So then is interoperability going to sort this out where everyone's just going to kind of, you know, on a gentleman's handshake agree, we're all going to do it, you know, symmetrically or asymmetrically as the case may be? Or is this something that needs to get written and ratified by the IETF?
Yeah, I think some of these things will kind of, by de facto, they will get sorted out. Different schemes have different merits. People have made their choices, and that's the nature of IETF, that we have to have consensus. Without consensus, things don't move along. So what's there in the draft is what achieved broad consensus on various possible ways in which EVPN can operate. But over a period of time, in my expectations, things will kind of progress towards the more scalable, more optimal solutions.
Ah, okay. Well, we've taken this from broad and high level to try to get an idea of what this is, all the way down to deep and nerdy to interoperability challenges that are coming up. So I don't think we could have drilled into too much more detail. We did. Seems like we did all right with all that. So this is a good show. This was pretty interesting. One of the things I'm always impressed by when I go back and look through Cisco documentation is just how thorough it is. And that is something, man, I wish all vendors had the same, you know, level of expectation for their docs. When I was reading through this, going through the white papers and the Cisco Live presentations that are all out there for free, just as long as you've got a username, so much thought has gone into how to do packet forwarding in this way. And then there's all the other different schemes that Cisco's got, you know, something to fit every need that's going on out there. And again, so much information about it and, you know, how to make it work for you. You know, sometimes Cisco's getting left out of the conversation these days in some ways. There's no reason for that. I love having conversations like this, like we had today, that shows right on the bleeding edge of right into the deep and gritty details of a really complicated, large-scale, you know, data center, and just how you're going to do it and what the capabilities are it gives you and why you want to do it in a particular way, because we've thought about these things. You know, that kind of stuff is great to hear.
Thank you very much for the kudos here. I mean, it's speak for Cisco completely that we very appreciate that feedback on the documentation, white paper, and technology leadership we're trying to still maintain. As we're close to a couple of years now, like 30 years in there at Cisco. So we appreciate that very much, and we still like to be leading edge in the industry.
So, Lucas, how can people follow you on the internet?
Yeah, orgblogs.cisco.com. I guess we attached a part of that to the recording of the show here, and then that's actually it. That's my digital signature.
It's awesome, and thanks for coming back again. It's been interesting to talk about this and sort of scratch away at how the future of this part of SDN works. And I think the key thing I got out of this was the fact that there's multiple data center networking strategies sort of coming together over time. And one of the things that I get from the audience is, you know, what's the difference? How can there be so many? I don't understand. It's so confusing. SDN doesn't make sense. And that's a key thing to take away from this, at least if you want something at the simpler level too.
Samir, thanks for coming on. I'm pretty sure this is your first time on Packet Pushers. We enjoyed your comments. And how can people follow you on the internet?
So I'm on LinkedIn. I'm not on Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, smart man.
I'm just a shy person, I guess.
Not very good. We'll look for you there. And, of course, you participate in the IETF, so I suppose folks that are headed to the IETF meetings could run into you there. Do you head out to the meetings when they happen?
Yeah, I try to get out of my day job and go to IETFs and collaborate with the wider audience.
That's great. Again, thanks for coming on the show. And, Greg, just your advertise your handles.
People can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com and find me on the Twitter as @etherealmind.
I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter, and ethancbanks.com is my blog. And for more information about Cisco and VXLAN and using BGP as a control plane, we're going to have links in the show notes for all of that stuff, including a blog that Lucas wrote that is an outstanding overview on the topic. This has been the Packet Pushers podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. Our hub site is packetpushers.net, where you can find this show and many other shows and other channels that we have going on. For any comments that you have about this show, questions that maybe you want to forward on to Lucas or Samir, if you like, you can send them to us and we'll get them to those guys, packetpushers@gmail.com. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.